Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation.
You are a human animal. You are a very special breed. For you are the only animal who can think, who can reason, who can read.
From KCRW Santa Monica, I'm Michael Silverblatt, and this is Bookworm. Today, I am very, well, triply honored. The Cultural Services Department of the French Embassy have brought me to New York because also in New York are members of the Oulipo. Listeners have heard me speak of Oulipo. You will be hearing more about it on the show today and on a future show as well. On this show, I am speaking to Jacques Roubaud. He is the author, most recently, of The Loop. It is published by Dalkey Archive Press. It is completely independent, but the second branch of an ongoing sequence that began with a book that was called The Great Fire of London. This was a slight misnomer. The book was truly called The Destruction, but because the general series, which will be of six or seven books, is The Great Fire of London. Now, I must tell you, I have fallen in love with Jacques Roubaud. as you read these books, which are combinations of autobiography and a questioning of how we know what it is we remember that make up an autobiography, and mini-essays and philosophical disquisitions and word plays, the books themselves are dazzling. They make one feel delightedly more intelligent than one in fact is. They inspire. But they begin because of a series of tragedies, and I thought you might describe how the works were initiated.
Well, I had in the 60s, I had a great project. I wanted to do something incredibly vast with poetry, mathematics, because that was my profession. Mathematics is my profession, even though I am now retired. I used to present myself as a mathematician retired and a poet not retired but tired. That's how it feels to me today. So in the 60s I did that big project and I worked on it for nearly 20 years, and suddenly it was a very, very beautiful plan. All was ready and I understood I could never do that. So there would be no novel, there would be no huge poetry work, there would be new mathematical work all linked together. I put it in the waste paper. And then a few years later, I tried to understand what had happened. And I decided to relate those things. But as the fact of preparing a huge plan for a lot of works had done me nothing good, I decided, on the contrary, I would make no plans at all. I would start writing and decided never to stop.
Now, I notice you say that you are and presented yourself as a mathematician, retired. But true to form in this book, in one of its notes, and we'll get to the idea, the book bifurcates and interpolates, because it is being written every day, early, early before the sun comes up, 3 or 4 in the morning. There is no returning back to revise. It goes on, and everything that gets said gets contradicted magnificently, because it seems as if memory in this book involves, as you say beautifully, seeing something from so many perspectives that one becomes like Argus, hundred-eyed. And that as you work, the material you work with shifts so much that it becomes like the shape-shifting god of the sea, Proteus. Am I right, Proteus or Poseidon, or both? Now, I want to say to listeners that the oulipo, now, I don't speak French. Can you say it in French? Ouvrage.
Ouvrage de littérature potentielle. It's a potential literature workshop, workshop for potential literature. But the French word ouvrir is something very, very modest. You see, an ouvrir is a place where people come to work on wood or to knit.
Uh-huh.
It's not something very, very important. It's a kind of work. It is a workshop, but essentially a workshop for the hands, when you work with your hands.
Well, when I read about Oulipo years ago, it was a group that began in 1960, and very quickly, I was finding books as they were translated, and they were works that became among my very favorites. The first that I read by Ramon Queneau was then called The Bark Tree and later retitled Witchgrass.
Yes.
Then there was Calvino, whose Cosmic Comics and Invisible Cities took my breath away. Then there was Perec, who I had heard of but had never read, but the sight of the mop-headed Perec with his cat on his shoulder made me know that even before his masterpiece, Life, A User's Manual, was translated, that I would love Perec. Now, for me, there's Jacques Roubaud. For all of the oulipistes, oulipiens, there is an anticipatory predecessor, Lewis Carroll. And as a boy, I had taught myself logic using Lewis Carroll's Book of Symbolic Logic.
Yes, it's a very interesting book. It's very funny. There's a place where there's a long, long piece of reasoning where he proves that no squirrel can read the times. And he has a lot of hypotheses to reach that goal. And it's essentially something that we at the Oulipo understand very well.
Yes. And so it was as if for me, this school of writing was a dream come true, because in addition, via the American poet John Ashbery, another predecessor was Raymond Roussel, who Ashbery managed to convince us, in the absence of good translations, was the most amazing prestidigitator. And all of his works involve invisible homophonic punning. So you might think you're reading a novel, but it might be a summary of a poem by Victor Hugo when properly transposed. Now, tell me, it seems that this is a response to the heaviness of the French literature of its time, of The Stranger, of the novels by Sartre. What brought the Oulipo in its mercurial, charming wittiness? I mean, every quality I like, I think of them as being orphans in the world, chess masters who've lost their boards. How did the Oulipo arrange itself?
Well, in fact, the founders of the Oulipo, Raymond Queneau and François Le Lyonnais, had made a kind of judgment on what was happening in French literature, and they didn't like to be avant-garde in a vanguard. They didn't want to suppress everything that had been before. They wanted to work with the whole tradition of world literature, and especially they had left surrealism behind. So they decided to do something that was rigorous but not boring. That was essentially. There is a very famous saying by Raymond Queneau that I have heard him say at least two or three times during the meetings of the Oulipo when he was still alive in the first years I was in the Oulipo. And it says, you have to think you have to think that we are not there to bore people. So there is what he called la rigolade. See, remember that always. There is la rigolade. You must laugh, be able to laugh. And then he said, but remember, there's not la rigolade only. It's not laughing only that's important. There is art too. So his intention would be not to bore people, but at the same time, try to reach something that was true, new, and interesting literature. And that's what he did.
Now, The Loop is a work in many ways about childhood, about lost childhood, about your childhood, and about childhood as a condition as well, a condition of remembrance. And it begins with something that I remember as well, of coming to a window as a child in the country house in Carcassonne and seeing the frost turning to ice, touching the ice, feeling it melt, and being able to move those shapes, parallelograms, octagrams of ice around as the water trickles down one's finger. And warmth and cold, indoors and outdoors, light and dark, all these oppositions get established as the conditions one needs for memory. And in fact, mirroring this nocturnal episode at the beginning is in the winter, in the darkness, at night, is a chapter referred to as, what are they called?
A fleur inverse, the inverse flower.
Yes, but at the end of the book, there are the bifurcations, and that opening chapter corresponding takes place in summer, in sunlight, and never is there to be a unitary thing in the loop. Everything loops to its opposite and joins opposites as well, and that this is what thought does, is what the book proposes ultimately. That our minds have the equipment to connect the dots, and what we are going to do is to watch Jacques Roubaud himself late at night connecting carefully, beautifully, the joining spots between opposites.
Well, that initial image in the loop is something very special for me because it's at the beginning of memory for me. One must know that in the place I was, Carcassonne, there is virtually never any snow. There is sun always. It's never very cold. And when some snow comes, it's for a child. It's an event, very important event. And it and that I was in my room that was hot, that was warm, and outside suddenly the silent snow had come during the night. And when I woke up, I saw what it had done on the pane, and I traced with my finger. And that's what I do with my memory in that book. With the finger of my imagination, I try to see shapes and write shapes on those icicles and that frost in the that is the past, what I have forgotten. I try to find it again. I try to see again outside the pane in the snow of the past.
And in English, I believe that kind of frost is called hoarfrost.
Yes.
And it looks, as you say, vegetal or like a flower has been pressed. You see ribs and spicules and spokes, and it is as if frost in its coldness and its distance from life wants to imitate the warmth of vegetation, that it itself presents itself as opposing the thing that one can see when one looks at it.
So I admire extremely the poetry of the troubadour, and that image of the hoarfrost on the pane in my room when I was a child, I later associated with one famous image of one of the great troubadours, Arnaut Daniel, that was quoted by Dante in the Commedia. And he said that the hoarfrost is a kind of inverse flower. And that's a very beautiful song and poem by Arnaut Daniel. And of course, when I was writing that first chapter of The Loop, I had that in mind.
And also, you see, one comes to feel that Roubaud writing has made himself and is terrifically vulnerable and yet a wizard. So that opposition to a vulnerable wizard is guiding us through this maze of a text in which texture and pleasure and memory become rigorously laid out for us and then subside back into vulnerability, sadness, and grace.
Yes, maybe.
Well, that's the way I feel about it. Now, I'm Michael Silverblatt, and you're listening to Bookworm from the studios of KCRW. I'm talking with Jacques Roubaud, author of The Loop, published by Dalkey Archive Press. We'll continue after this short break. I'm Michael Silverblatt. This is Bookworm, and I'm talking with Jacques Roubaud about The Loop. One of the things that, how to put it, in my language, when something takes me beyond my expected limits, I say that I'm touched beyond words, that there's something
yes.
post-articulate. And when you were writing about the Nyanya, which Nyanya is like the teddy bear or the bit of ribbon that someone saves, or really Linus's security blanket, but no one will let you touch their Nyanya, especially not the little girl with whom you're transacting. And you explain potential uses of the Nyanya. You don't think it's a sexual object, but you reveal something that I had never heard said that touched me beyond words. It was when you said that perhaps the Nyanya unites worlds, that without it, you can't make the passage into the world of sleep and dream, that the Nyanya ultimately has been allowed to be the emissary of the other world.
Yes, a kind of talisman that enables the child to reach sleep and be protected by something very small, but essential, and that give reassurance, and so it's very private for the child, and they have a lot of imagination when they choose what object will be used by them, and it's essentially the way of memory. That's how I work with memory, trying to find again the Nyanya I had never had, and the hoarfrost I lost on the plain in Carcassonne in 1941 or 42.
And this is a terrain that you are separated from, the terrain of childhood, by war and history. But you delete history in a sense by saying, I will speak only of what I remember. And so, as you recognize on the other side of the divide that your father was a member of the Resistance, that a trip for piano lessons to another city by train, to another house, that on the train there was also a window covered with soot in which the finger, on which the finger got dirty, just as the finger got wet.
That was not hoarfrost, but that was soot. That was black and not white.
It was gritty and sooty, and the finger now is dirty, and the parents say, do not touch, because what's more, you'll be touching the white keys of the piano. And it's under the apparency of piano lessons that this meeting of the Resistance is taking place. Resistance. The magic of understanding how things happen by building only out of your own innards, by braiding this way, is truly magical and thrilling to me.
Well, it's very kind of you to say so.
Well, you know, like Proust, it becomes, or really, like following the inner workings of Leopold Bloom's mind, it becomes a model for consciousness and intersects with our own consciousness, so that as we read, the reader constructs his own or her own left brain and right brain, all sorts of stimulants to our own memories are, in a sense, the product of your investigation. So that one of the gifts of the book is that you give your reader the equipment, like the breadcrumbs of Hansel and Gretel, not to be eaten this time by birds, a way of finding the path backwards.
I think the way I was writing that book, and the way people could hear it, myself reading it or reading it, it's a kind of example that anyone can do with one's own memory, and not try to go from outside, but go from inside and remember as it comes. And that the system I employed there, the way of not going back on what I've written, even if there are mistakes, never mind. But it helps to move forward in time.
And tell me, because, you know, here in America, we've had the first two books in this series translated. How many will there be ultimately?
In fact, the problem is it's not meant to be finished.
Yes.
Of course. It's meant.
I didn't think of it. Of course.
It's meant to be. I can't say when it would be finished, but it's not finished. But at the same time, you can stop at any place.
Or start at any place, really, as well.
And start again. So, for instance, there have been six books published. And in the autumn, my publisher will make a huge book with them of the whole six books. But, of course, I've written other things. But there will be those six books in a whole. And I think that it might reach to 2009 pages and be published at the end of the year 2009.
Ah, a very Ulippian circumstance.
Yes.
Now, I want to say that most of the books that we have in English are published by Donkey Archive Press, who have published the first two books of the series, The Great Fires of London and The Loop. I've been talking with Jacques Roubaud, the author, as is plain by now, of The Loop, published by Dalkey Archive. Thank you, Jacques, for joining me.
Thank you very much.
You can podcast this program, share it with a friend, or embed it on your blog with a click of a button on our new media player at kcrw.com. My co-producer is Melinda Siegel. Alan Howard is associate producer. The technical director is Mario Diaz. Special thanks to the cultural services of the French Embassy for bringing both Jacques Roubaud and your bookworm to New York City. Thanks to recording engineer Leszek Wojcik at the Carnegie Studios in New York City. I'm Michael Silverblatt. Join me again next time on Bookworm.
As you ramble through the pages, books will take you through the ages, back to days of old when knights were bold, and books,
books, books, books, books, books, books can be funny too.
Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation. This program is produced in the studios of KCRW Santa Monica. You can access archives of all Bookworm programs and podcast the most recent ones from our website. Go to kcrw.com/bookworm, plus copies are available. For ordering information, call 310-450-5183.
Books will take you through the ages, back to days of old when knights were bold, and books,
books, books, books, books. Too.
Books make you laugh and sing. Books tell you everything. They're your treasure, friends in prose and rhyme.
Now it's Book of the Mouse Club time.
I want to tell you about a new show from the Financial Times called Life and Art from FT Weekend, hosted by me, Lila Reptopoulos. Life and Art is twice a week. On Mondays, I have a guest on to talk about life and how to live a good one. Everything from winter travel to cooking to living more creatively. And on Fridays, we talk art. Two FT journalists and I discuss a piece of culture that's in the air. New music, movies, and more. Find Life and Art from FT Weekend wherever you listen.